This is the last day of this December 2009 four-day session. Today we'll take up a koan from the Mumon Kan. This is number 15, Tozan and 60 Blows. And I'll read just the case. Tozan came to see Umon and was asked by him, "Where have you come from?" "From Sado," he replied. "Where were you during the summer Ango?" "I was at Hozu Temple in Konan Province," replied Tozan. "When did you leave there?" "On the 25th of August." Umon burst out, "I spare you 60 blows." The next day Tozan came again before Umon and said, "Yesterday you said I should receive 60 blows. I don't know where my fault was." Umon said, "You rice bag, why do you wander about, now west of the river, now south of the lake?" And at this, Tozan was enlightened. I'll save the Mumon's commentary and verse later, just for the sake of new people. These koans in this collection, called the Mumon Kan or the Gateless Barrier, each of the 48 koans has the main case, which was just read for this one, and then Mumon added his own commentary and verse to the case. Most of the cases are dialogues, sometimes stories, but mostly dialogues based on these kind of exchanges between masters or between masters and monks, each of which has some confounding quality to it, some contradictory element. And of course that's what makes it a koan. The rational mind cannot resolve it, cannot understand it. And if one looks at it, looks into it, investigates it with real seriousness, then one is forced, in order to resolve it, one is forced to think outside the box, which really means to go beyond thinking in our ordinary way. This Tozan, that's the Japanized version of, these are Chinese masters. Tozan is a Japanized version of his Chinese name, which was Dongshan. In fact, both of these guys, their names are easy enough to pronounce that I'm just going to revert to the Chinese, their original Chinese name. So it's Dongshan and Yunmen. We have a little material on this Dongshan. He lived in the 900s, and he became, after this exchange here, he became a disciple of Yunmen. Later, after the occasion of this case, he became a great master in his own right, and I have some dialogues here. I'm reading from Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. After taking up residence as a teacher, Tongshan addressed the monks, saying, "Language doesn't help matters. Speech does not bring forth the truth. Those burdened by language are lost. Those held up by words are deluded. Do you understand? You patch-robed monks should be clear about it. If you come here, you must start using the Dharma eye. It's just like I say, but I have erred about one thing. What error is there in the words I've spoken? What error is there in the words I've spoken? This sentence, if you come here, you must start using the Dharma eye. Sometimes that's referred to as the third eye. In terms of this metaphor, our two eyes are the perspective of our discriminating minds, that sees things in terms of this and that, sees things dualistically, right and wrong, higher and lower, good and bad, enlightened and deluded. There is another way. It is beyond all two-ness. This is referred to over and over in the Affirming Faith in Mind, the document by Sung Tsan that we chant every day. It's been said that koans are like they're like throwing sand in our eyes, our two eyes, so that we're forced to see with the Dharma eye. Another time, a monk asked, "What is it when one takes the distant journey?" Dongshan said, "If the weather is clear, you can't go. Wait until the rain soaks your head." The distant journey. All of us here are squarely on that distant journey. Some of us will stay on it the rest of our lives and lives in the future. Others will not stay on it as long. But we've all embarked on that journey. And we wouldn't have done so had the weather been clear. A monk asked, "What did all the ancient holy ones do?" These questions are from experienced monks. These are seasoned monks who want to hear how the master will respond. It's a great open questions that could be answered in different ways. What did all the ancient holy ones do? Dongshan said, "Enter the mud, enter the water." It's said in Zen that after enlightenment, we want to become like water buffaloes. Water buffaloes are a metaphor for they are in Asia, they are beasts of service, of labor. So first there's the awakening, and then there is serving others through that awakening. A monk asked, "What is Buddha?" This is the single most common question that we find in the old texts, the old dialogues. What is Buddha, of course, is not asking about Shakyamuni, it's asking about Buddha nature, truth, the way. What is the Tao, the way? And Dongshan said, 3 pounds of flax. This is this exchange is also included in the Mumonkan as a koan in its own right. A monk asked, "What is a seamless monument?" Dongshan said, "A stone lion at the intersection." A seamless monument has no seams and also no edges. What is that? It's no form that can be imagined. What is the formless? What is this formless true nature? Stone lion at the intersection. Another monk asked, "What is Buddha?" Dongshan said, "The crystal clear truth." Crystal clear is an apt description of what Zen is pointing to. Although we in Zen we have images, we have lots of words, millions of words in texts like this and the sutras, that is the words attributed to the Buddha and the masters. Zen points to that which is beyond words, beyond all images, even the most exalted images of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and full moons, circles. Crystal clear. It's an old saying, in Zen, we have nothing. That's what's so appealing about it to many of us. How do you top nothing? It is the recognition in Zen that it has to be beyond anything you can say about it. It has to be beyond any formula, any description, any statement, no matter how grand and profound. Beyond. From the very beginning, there has never been a single thing. A very famous statement, and the subject of calligraphy that's often done by masters. And so this next dialogue reveals this confounding nature of any description of truth or Zen. A monk asks, what is the meaning of the phrase, the 10,000 conditions cease? This is pointing to a state of samadhi. It's beyond all states. Conditions means states. In a way, this is what practice really aims at, is to transcend all mind states. We go through them when we're doing intense zazen, such as in Sesshin. We're just plowing our way through ups and downs, states of euphoria, discouragement, tiredness, states of sorrow, states of and shame and embarrassment, states of pride. We're just slicing through them. And in doing that, we can come to see through them, where they all come to rest. So what is that, the 10,000 condition cease? Dongshan said, inside the pot, the stone person sells date balls. And finally, a monk asked, what is Dongshan's sword? Dongshan said, why? The monk said, this student wants to know. Dongshan said, wrong. There. You want it, you got it. Not this, not that. Go back to our case now and go through it more carefully, commenting on it. Dongshan came to see Yunmen. First, a little backstory here. It was the custom in ancient China for the monks to take periods where they would go on pilgrimage. They would walk sometimes great distance and go from one temple to another to sample the teaching, various teachings, the way that the masters of each temple presented teachings, sometimes engaging in an exchange with the master, with others there, senior monks. And we find again and again in the koans and elsewhere, we find the masters warning monks about not getting caught up in travel for its own sake. This must have become this convention of taking time off to travel must have become something of a semester abroad. But the impression one gets from reading this is that the monks didn't do it for the purpose for which it was intended. That is to clarify one's understanding and deepen one's understanding and expose oneself to different styles. But it became just a kind of a vacation of a sort. And a waste of time, from what we can tell from what many of these masters said, where they were just kind of drifting and avoiding the hard and painful work of facing oneself right here, now. There's an old saying, travel is a fool's paradise. It's so easy to be enthralled with new places, new foods, new customs, different languages, different people. And it can be a wonderful experience, especially for young people. It can be one of the most broadening, in the best sense, experiences to get out of one's own area and even especially out of one's own country, because it reveals a whole different perspective, much more textured understanding of humanity and life. I think it's one of the best things a young person can do is get out of town and experience something new, especially these days when so many young people remain dependent on their parents well into adulthood. Even now, people say that it used to be, say, 21 was the age of adulthood. Now, I keep hearing it's now reaching into the 30s before one becomes, young people become really independent. It's hard not to chafe at that, but I tell myself that in other, many other countries, certainly Mexico and others, this is the norm. It always has been the norm that the child lives with the parent until marriage. In any case, this traveling thing can be overdone, and then it just serves no, beyond a certain point, it just becomes just a kind of a craving for ever more interesting experiences, and it is an avoidance of the real work of resolving this great matter of birth and death. Where have you come from? This is the classic opening question. And a neophyte monk might take this literally, as Dongshan did. Just literally, where are you from? What's your hometown or what's your home temple? But it has far deeper significance. Where have you come from? Who can answer that? Who among us can answer that? Well, Dongshan did it in his own way. Well, from Buffalo, let's say. All right. Yunmen takes that in. Instead of clobbering him right there, he says, another question. Where were you during the summer ango? That's the inverse of the travel period. It's the intense training period. Where were you during the summer ango? Well, I was at, since you ask, I was at Hozu Temple in Konan Province. I think you know that area. By the way, the books say that Dongshan had come hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles on foot from the extreme, from northern China to the deep south of China. This is an important factor in this drama. I was at Hozu Temple in Konan Province, replied Tozan. When did you leave there? Why, I believe it was the 25th of August. Umon burst out, "I spare you 60 blows. This is really another way of saying, I ought to beat the devil out of you, but I don't even want to waste my time. One of the points of this koan is to appreciate the fact that Yunmen asked him two more questions after the first one. When Dungshan answered this kind of ordinary flat answer, "I'm from Sado," Yunmen knew everything he needed to about this young Dungshan. In fact, he knew all he needed to probably before he even asked him the first question, just by the way he carried himself when he came in. So why did he ask two more questions? Maybe he saw the dust that accumulated on Dungshan after this hundreds of miles of walking. Maybe he saw the weariness, the mended clothes, the worn shoes. Maybe he did have some curiosity about how far he'd come. But he also was working skillfully to lead Dungshan on. They say, give him enough rope and he'll hang himself. Yunmen here was just feeding him more rope. "Here, have another length of rope. Yeah, not quite enough. Here, take this." And then he blasts him. The next day, Dungshan came again before Yunmen and said, "Yesterday you said I should receive 60 blows. I don't know where my fault was." You can understand his confusion. He asked three questions. He answered sincerely, directly, honestly, simply. "What did I do wrong?" And then Yunmen delivers the coup de grace. "You rice bag! Why do you wander about like this? Here and there, everywhere, all the time. What are you doing with your time?" And this Dungshan was enlightened. Here we can speak more about the koan in terms of Mumon's commentary. So let's go right into that. It's a fairly long one. "If Yunmen at that time had given him the fodder of the truth and awakened him to the vivid, dynamic Zen life, Yunmen's school would not have declined. All night, Dungshan struggled in a sea of yes and no. When long-awaited dawn broke, again he went to Yunmen, who helped him open his eyes. But though Dungshan was suddenly enlightened, he could not be called brilliant." Let's just take those two paragraphs. There's one more. This first one, if Yunmen had given him the fodder of the truth and awakened him, well, he did help him come to awakening. So Mumon here in this commentary is referring to earlier in the exchange. And here we see an example of what is sprinkled throughout the Mumon Khan and throughout Chinese culture actually is a way of this to us odd way of praising or exalting someone through criticism, through seeming disparagement. Yunmen's line was one of the five principal schools of Zen, his lineage at that time, but it didn't last as long as the other ones. And Mumon here and there takes a little teasing reference to this in the Mumon Khan. It seems that Yunmen's school was so steep and so forbidding that it was inaccessible to all but the fewest number of people, and for that reason it didn't attract enough people to continue on through the centuries. Actually, I think it did last about 200 years, but that's not long compared to the other lineages. And then this all-night Dongshan struggled in a sea of yes and no. Pretty much all of us know what it is to go sleepless, one's mind tormented by this and that. Should I have said this? What did I do wrong? Should I have said that? What if I had done this instead of that? Or, looking ahead, what if this happens? What if that happens? Parents know this from their worries about their children, what might happen, what did happen. Teenagers probably cost parents more sleep than anything. Business life, career choices, that or this. Stick with this or change to that. Right or wrong. Act or wait. This night would have been the most important night in Dongshan's whole life. It was a night of doubt, questioning, wondering in the deepest, most anguished way. Questioning that drew him beyond thought, actually. Even in his thoughts of yes and no, right and wrong, what did I do, what should I have said, even the as questions, in the form of questions, even these thoughts have the capacity, the power to strip us bare. The French writer Saint-Exupéry put it very well. He said, in anything at all, perfection is finally attained not when there is no longer anything to add, but when there is no longer anything to take away, when a body has been stripped down to its nakedness. This is the whole point of a koan, to strip us clean, to bring us to a state of absolute pure not knowing, darkness. Dongshan's dark night of the soul proved to be the most wonderful night. And then he dragged himself to Yunmen the next morning. Notice the courage. After getting blasted like that, here he walks, not just hundreds, but thousands. It was probably closer to 2,000 miles that he walked. And then he gets hammered by Yunmen in this way. And the a more challenged student would resolve that by just blaming it on the teacher. What's wrong with him anyway? Oh, he's completely unfair. How can he be this way? He's abusive. He's this. He's that. And it's a mark of Dongshan's greatness that he didn't resort to any of that. He just used it to probe his own mind instead of getting caught up in externals. There's this wonderful word used in psychology sometimes called externalizing. This is a very common phenomenon where when we are in distress, we come into conflict with someone, the first thing we do is to ascribe blame to someone else. This is so common. It's so low to just blame someone else, and common in both senses of the words. But it's not the response of someone who is really working on herself or himself. Not that no one else is ever at fault, of course. It often is the case, but is the real distinction of someone with a mind that seeks the way to look to oneself. What is my responsibility in this? Okay, whatever. That person has some responsibility in this conflict, but what about me? What have I done? What could I have done differently? It's that questioning oneself. This is the essence of Zazen. And people can know this principle. We see it all the time. People on staff who are living in this confined environment, all these people working, living, eating, sleeping, everything under one roof, conflicts are inevitable. And people can know this principle. Okay, that person may have been at fault, but what about me? Let's not be so quick to just dump it on the other person. Where could I be at fault? Where could I be responsible here too? It's amazing to me how seldom people apply that principle. They know it, sort of, but not enough to actually work with it. When long-awaited dawn broke, who doesn't know that? Long-awaited, tossing and turning, the longest nights one can imagine. It's got to be dawn now. No, it goes on, this long night. When long-awaited dawn broke, again he went to Yunmen. He had to know. He had to know. So fierce was his longing to understand. When Yunmen blasted him, not just once but twice, he knew that this was an uncommon practitioner. This was an uncommon monk. This was someone who could work with this rough treatment. And he was proved right about that. T.S. Eliot said something that I often think of Dongshan here. From wrong to wrong the exasperated spirit proceeds, unless restored by that refining fire wherein you must move in measure like a dancer. That refining fire of Zazen, drawing us deeper through self and other, through right and wrong, through blame and praise. And then Mumon says, but though Dongshan was suddenly enlightened, he could not yet be called brilliant. He's referring here, of course, to the long, long job of refining one's understanding, integrating it into one's life. There's the initial experience, but then that's far from having really incorporated it into one's body, the insight, so that it can inform one's actions, one's responses throughout one's day. This is the work of a lifetime, really. And then Mumon finally says, now let me ask you, should Dongshan have been beaten or not? If you say yes, then trees and grasses, everything ought to be beaten. If you say no, you accuse Yunmen of lying. If you understand this clearly, then you and Dongshan exhale with the same mouth. Here he's trying to trap us in right or wrong, fairness or unfairness. And then the verse. The lioness trains her cubs this way. If they walk ahead, she kicks them and quickly dodges. Heedlessly, he came back to Yunmen, but was checkmated. The first arrow was only a scratch, but the second went deep. Well, apparently there was this legend in China at the time that that's how the mother lion develops strength and courage in her cubs. She gives them a swat and then ducks. And the ones who come back willing to engage again rather than just slinking off, licking one's wounds, feeling sorry for oneself, the ones who come back and engage are the ones she recognizes as worthy of keeping. Heedlessly he came back to Yunmen, but was checkmated. The whole secret of this koan is in that word, heedlessly. Heedlessly. No-mindedly, beyond thought of protecting oneself, beyond fear. There's no fear or sense of needing to protect oneself when there is no self. In a samadhi of questioning, the first arrow was only a scratch, but the second went deep. Time is up now. We'll stop and recite the four vows.